Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. The Dow recovered a bit after a 10-day drop. Ross tells us what that could mean going into the new year, and he looks at gold, crude, natural gas, cotton, cocoa, and coffee. Ross also has a special offer for our listeners. Founder of Armstrong Economics, Martin Armstrong, joins us from Florida to chat about how political turmoil around the planet could affect the markets. He examines the idea of the U.S. slapping a 25% tariff on Canadian goods. He even weighs in on what the drones in New Jersey might be looking for. InsideTrackTrading.com president Eric Haddock examines the cycles that could be ruling Bitcoin, gold, currencies, the stock market, and commodities. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at ChartSpy. Ross, best of the season, Ross.
And the same to you. Merry Christmas and best of the season to everybody out there.
And you have a little gift for everybody.
Yeah, you know, good through Christmas, 25% off the subscription for new subscribers, and they can find that at the website, chartsandmarkets.com.
The Dow especially had a 10-day drop, something not seen since 1974.
Yeah, you don't see this too often. Actually, I do remember it. I wasn't trading back in those days, but I was watching the markets. And 1973, 1974 is when I first became acquainted with markets. And I'll tell you, back in those days, that was pretty scary. But remember, too, that didn't happen at the top of the market. That happened near the bottom of the run. And, you know, here we are, we're just coming off all-time highs. So, yes, it's a bad break. The advanced decline line, you know, topped out weeks ago. So clearly, the move that we are seeing in the Dow and that we've seen in the transports is just a reflection of the, you know, the broader market, what's going on. When you look at some of the individual indices that are more weighted to the big cap names and the high flyers, the S&P has held up reasonably well and the NASDAQ up until this week. And the S&P, as of, I guess it was Tuesday when we started to roll over, Tuesday, Wednesday, finally broke a preceding high. You know, we've been stair-stepping up in the market for months and months now. And so as of this week, we have now broken the pivot high that we had in November, and also they came back down and tested the one that we saw in October. The moving averages all down to pretty good first support levels, like the 50-day or the 20-week moving average levels for the S&P and for the NASDAQ. But and got some good oversold readings. Have one of my springboard, oversold springboard signals in the S&P as of Thursday. So at that point, you expect to see a, you know, 50 to 60% retracement rally. We got that in spades on Friday, big bounce as far as the Dow was concerned, up 700 or 800 points, the S&P up 80 or 90 at one point. So we're getting a lot of volatility. What we have to watch for here, though, is that if this rally doesn't take hold, then we've got the makings of pretty good distribution pattern up here, and there have been a number of significant tops that have happened historically around the turn of the year. So we want to be very careful. as we move forward. The lows that we've now seen this week, I think, become absolutely critical. And if we violate those, the typical move when you've had as much weakness as we've seen in the advanced decline line coming off this high is that you'll have at least a 10% decline. So far, we've had about 4.5% to 5% in the S&P. So we might see as big a break again if we take out the lows that we've just put in here in the last 48 hours.
What's going on with gold?
Gold market, like a lot of things, got down to some oversold levels at the early part of this week. We had, in October, the end of October, we had some really good upside exhaustion levels, some sequential and combo sell signals there, October 20th to 30th. We've now backed off, and we've tested the 20-day moving average on gold. Best support, probably, if we and we've bounced pretty well at the end of the week here, but similar to what we're seeing in the S&P, if the rally doesn't take hold, then I would think the first calendar quarter of next year, we could be looking at the gold price maybe down around 2470 or so. That would be testing the 50-day moving average, which would just be a classic, or sorry, the 50-week moving average, which would be a classic at this point in what is a larger correction from the October high.
What's the story on the energy front?
The crude oil, once again, up tested some resistance, similar to what it saw at the end of the previous week. We've got similar highs to say to what we had back then. Still looking at it as being in a downtrend with a seasonal low about ready to happen at any point here. 71 and three quarters, $72 is probably what you want to be looking at as a potential breakout level. But, I'm from Missouri. I need to be shown here that this market's capable of turning. So I'd rather wait for the reversal and ideally see a bit of a spike to a new low into the mid to low 60s to put in a really climactic bottom. And you're going to have some patience waiting for that to come about.
Is natural gas picking up?
Natural gas is the best looking item out there in the complex. We've got the commitment of traders numbers showed significant buy signals back the third week of October. And then we've been grinding our way slowly higher. And as of this week, it's broken out of what looks to be a pretty reasonable base. And, if the weather turns super cold and we get some heavy snows, then it probably gives it a pretty good move on the upside. So, that's one that you might want to, be looking at getting on board.
Currencies, the U.S. and Canadian dollars, a tale of two different currencies?
Oh, yeah. The U.S. dollar has been strong against everything. Canadian dollar has been weak against everything. And the dollar, U.S. dollar, staged a bit of an outside reversal here on Friday. It's overextended, but still has got the potential to move higher from where it is right now. The Canadian dollar, though, down at multi-year lows again this week. I mean, that's the story as we've moved through the last month or two. The measurements that we look at for extremes are really starting to pop at this point. We've got our exhaustion index is down to a level that we've seen maybe a dozen times in the last 25 years, and each one of those ended up with a pretty decent recovery rally. So what you want to look at is the first day with a higher high. It would be the significant point to say it's the catalyst for the turn, and to be looking for a rally back to the 50-day moving average. Now, doesn't seem like a lot, but two or 3 cents in the Canadian dollar would be a worthwhile move these days.
Crazy times for the three C's, cotton, cocoa, and coffee.
It really is. I mean, some of these numbers, we've got like, you know, the coffee market was up earlier this year and made some pretty, you know, pretty decent correction. And then we're right back up at all-time highs. I've got some weekly exhaustion signals up here. That's the first time in a number of years, so it could be setting up for a significant high. Cocoa, same type of thing. Big moves on that one. The we've got the daily numbers are at extremes in terms of the long-term picture. You know, I've got my data only goes back into the 1990s, but guess what? This level is at about three times what used to be the all-time high. So that one getting pretty darn pricey, definitely is vulnerable to some good downside action.
And cotton?
Cotton has been a... just the other side of the coin, we are looking at multi-year lows in that one. So I guess if you're going to go out and buy some, buy anything, T-shirts are the ways to go right now.
Ross, can you remind people again how they can get your special offer?
The website is chartsandmarkets.com, and there's a link on the front page there to the 25% discount off the annual subscription.
Ross, best of the season.
Best to you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Coming up, Martin Armstrong next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Martin Armstrong, founder of Armstrong Economics, available online at armstrongeconomics.com. He's speaking to us from Florida. Marty, welcome back to This Week in Money.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Well, this week, the Fed cut interest rates again by a quarter of a percent. What does Socrates see ahead for interest rates?
Well, we're really approaching a more volatile period from probably March into August. People have to understand that central banks have lost control of the economy. When Keynesian economics was born back in the Depression, raising interest rates to stop us from spending too much or lowering interest rates to stimulate made sense because the government had a balanced budget. Today, the government is the biggest borrower in the room. So they raise interest rates to fight inflation, and what happened? Our interest expenditures hit $1 trillion. All right, and then you got to pay interest on that $1 trillion next year. They've lost control. They cannot control inflation with raising and lowering interest rates anymore.
Well, our historic market person Bob Hoyes pointed out the Fed was created to prevent recessions and depressions, but since it was created back on Jekyll Island, there have been 18 recessions and depressions. Can it do its job at all anyway?
Well, the way it was designed back in 1913 was correct, and most people overlook this, but to stimulate the economy and prevent recessions, etc., the Fed bought and sold corporate paper, not government. Only after World War One, when they were increasing the debt to cover the war, they then instructed the Fed, no, buy government paper, not corporate. So the idea originally was you're going into recession, companies, banks don't want to lend to companies, so the Fed would buy their corporate paper and they didn't have to lay off people. That was the original design. But when they took it for World War One, they never put it back. This is what happens with government. I mean, they come up with some sort of solution for the immediate moment, and then that's it. You know, they never change it back.
In Canada last week, the Bank of Canada dropped the bank rate by another half a point to 3.25%. Plus, the finance minister and housing minister resigned prior to the announcement that for 2023-24, Canada has a $61.9 billion deficit. Are these warning signs for the Canadian economy?
Yes. I mean, it's not just Canada. We're going into a sovereign debt crisis probably in 2025. Even countries like Brazil, emerging markets, to sell their debt, they issued it in dollars. This was the problem in China. China warned them. The provinces do not borrow in foreign currency. They did because they thought they would save money. Then the dollar goes up, and guess what? They owe 20% more in debt. So you're going to see sovereign debt crisis hit next year, probably in around the March-April period, because then as you threaten war in the Middle East and with Russia, etc., then the capital comes here. That pushes the dollar up, and all the emerging markets lose even more money. Nobody's, you know, basically understands any of this collectively. It's just everybody's acting independently.
From the outside, does Canada look like political theater starring a lot of World Economic Forum characters?
Yes. I mean, look, so does Europe. Just look at what's going on. I mean, you had German government just failed. The French government failed. The interest rates in France, all right, the government rates are now higher than corporate. In fact, French interest rates went above that of Greece. So you're talking about the two largest economies in Europe are approaching basket, you know, cases. So, I mean, Canada has got its problems, but we're all going in that same direction because all they ever do is borrow year after year with no intention of paying anything back. And then you constantly are paying interest on that. And honestly, by the time you get to 2029, you'll be lucky if not 75% of your budget is going to be consumed just by interest. It does not go do anything to help the economy, the people. That's it. You're looking at a complete disaster coming in the years ahead, thanks to our politicians that do not know what they're doing.
Could you see an international agreement, sort of like I think what happened after the Second World War, where, everybody owes a lot of money, we start from zero again, the banks, you can write it off. Can they do that? Would they do that? Is it possible?
Yes. Look, you're looking at probably that is the excuse for war. This is why, you know, I was over in Europe a couple months back, and that's all they want to do is talk about war. And it makes no sense, but I think they basically want to use the war, like World War II, to default on all the debts and start over again. The big problem we have this time is that most of your banks are required by law to have government bonds as their reserve currency. So if the bonds go bust, you're wiping out all the banks. In the Great Depression, over 9,000 banks failed. And that's what makes a depression. When the debt goes bust, that is far worse than the stock market.
The Dow, the S&P 500, the Russell 2000 are all coming off new all-time highs. Meanwhile, the NASDAQ has continued to hit new all-time highs. What does Socrates see ahead for the stock markets?
We're definitely looking at a retest of support in 2025. people are getting very concerned, very confused about all these, you know, the problems we have economically. You know, you look at Europe and you're having one government after another fall, one by one. I mean, this does not inspire confidence in governments. I know a lot of people think that, you know, oh, Trump coming in, we're going to get the big rally again. The computer doesn't support that.
Bitcoin's over $100,000. Could Bitcoin be the crash of 1929 or the dot-com bubble bust all over again?
Yes. I mean, look, I mean, all this idea of digital currencies and cryptos and stuff like that, it's fantasy land. I mean, here in Florida, we just had two hurricanes. I can tell you the internet was down for about 10 days. You couldn't even use a credit card. How, you know, unless you had cash, you couldn't get food or anything. It was cash only. The same thing in Appalachian. I mean, those people, you know, without cash, you starve. This is absurd. You saw the same thing in Canada when they freed bank accounts of truckers and anybody that donated to them. You know, the only way they could survive is cash that they had. That was it.
The U.S. dollar continues to show strength. Do you think President Trump would prefer a strong or weak U.S. dollar?
He probably thinks a strong dollar is better, but it's irrelevant what he thinks because basically the rise and fall of the dollars is predicated really on capital flows. And, you know, I have argued that, you know, it's, you know, when you're looking at civil unrest and war in Europe. The U.S. was bankrupt in 1896. It was World War One and World War Two that sent all the capital here. That's what made the U.S. the largest economy. So we're seeing the same thing again. And, you know, when you have all these governments over in Europe talking about, you know, war, it's, you know, what do? You get your money out of there because there are going to be capital controls. Once they start looking at this, they'll put in capital controls that you can't move money around.
Gold is off its late October highs. What does Socrates see ahead for gold?
Also some retesting of support. You know, people have been, I would say, misrepresenting why you have some central banks been buying gold. And the main reason, you know, it's not that they think gold's going to go up. They don't care if it's going down. What it is that it is basically neutral. Like China dumped at least, I mean, maybe up to about $100 billion this year. We're waiting for the final numbers, but of U.S. Treasury debt. You go to war, U.S. would default on it. So they can't have dollars and they can't have euros. So what are they doing? They're basically moving to gold as reserve in central banks because of all the geopolitical nonsense that's going on.
Silver is off its late October highs. What does Socrates see ahead for silver?
Same thing. I mean, basically, we're going to look at initially a retest of support. I think a lot of people that think that everything's just going to boom because of Trump, I think they're going to be disappointed. But the Democrats down here are, although they're bankrupt and still asking people to donate money to Camilla, and the numbers are out. They spent like $1.5 billion and lost, right? Money was just squandered, and they still owe at least $20 million. But nevertheless, they intend to put up a very strong opposition to prevent anything that Trump does. You know, you're looking at even this judge in New York wants to just postpone the sentencing until after he's done his four-year term, so they can still throw him in jail. The Democrats want to keep that as a leash around his neck and say, you do what we tell you to do, or we're going to do this. It's government has completely, it's the corruption is just so bizarre. And I'm not even sure we're going to have a 2028 election by then.
Are crude oil prices anticipating President Trump's drill baby drill campaign?
Yes. I mean, I think you're looking at most of these things. Trump will probably bring back the pipeline, I think. And that has risen, given rise to basically the idea that we're talking about maybe, the western provinces of Canada joining the United States as the 51st state. Look, you have, Trudeau is just following whatever comes out of Geneva, and most of your other countries over there are. It looks like, Crude will probably retest support basically as well. But I would be looking at probably a serious shift in trend around March, April. Then I think you're going to start seeing things take off. Probably has to do with war. And it's not just Russia that we have a problem with. The fall of Syria was really backed by Turkey, and Erdogan there has his visions like, Hitler wanted to rejoin Europe, so did Napoleon. His idea is to unite and resurrect the Ottoman Empire. He's called on all Arab nations to join together. I mean, he wants to be the leader, as, Turkey was before.
What does Socrates see ahead for the price of lithium?
Look, electric cars, I think, are slowly dying. I can tell you down here in Florida, with the storms that came, one guy about five doors from me just had his Tesla, in his garage. And with the salt water that came up, the car blew up and his whole house burnt down. Electric cars are not very good in cold, and they're not very good to have, certainly by the beach. And you look at Biden's proposal of putting in all these, spending billions of dollars to put in charging stations. Not one has been created. All the money, who knows where it even went. I would not deal with an electric car. I strongly advise that you stick with the gasoline.
Can Socrates predict if President Trump will be good for the markets over the next 4 years?
Look, we're heading into a recession, I think, regardless of who is president. Trump can, if he really wants to make a difference, he's got to modify some of his policies, including the tariffs and things on that nature.
Are tariffs a good idea? Replace federal income tax with tariffs?
Yes and no. We no longer need income taxes. All right, taxes were necessary at the federal level when money was gold and silver coin. The king had to get some back to fund his budget for next year. We're not in that situation anymore. We just print the money. All right, why are we borrowing money that we create ourselves and then pay interest on it? This whole system is failing. And the theory that somebody has sold to Trump on this is that eliminating the income tax, because the country used to be funded by tariffs before the income tax. And okay, fine, historical fact, sounds nice. All right. The problem is we didn't have all these social programs back then. It wasn't Social Security and all this stuff. So there's no way tariffs are going to fund that. And if you put in these kinds of tariffs, you're only going to create a recession outside the United States. And as that, Europe would go into depression, and they're going to drag the United States down with it. I'm sorry, it's just a brain-dead idea. What I would do is I would eliminate the income tax, absolutely. The major reason companies left the United States and manufacturing moved offshore, it wasn't because they were paying this guy $2 an hour instead of $5 or something like that. It was taxes. Taxes in the 60s reached, as high as 90%. I testified before Congress on this back in 96, and they still haven't done anything. They asked me why no American company got any of the contracts to create the Yellow River Dam in China. I said, because Germany basically doesn't charge worldwide taxation. So a German company bidding on the same project in Japan is 35% cheaper, just on taxes alone. We have to revise what we're doing here. We're still working under like 18th century ideas of economics and companies, and it's just crazy. If we just eliminate the income tax, stop the borrowing, just print to cover the deficit, that's it. You don't borrow it and paying interest on that forever. We're still paying interest on World War II debt. I mean, and World War I, because we've never paid anything off. Vietnam, we're still paying the interest on that. It just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling. So next thing you know, what we have spent in interest, all right, is three times the cost of World War II. I mean, it's just getting insane. So eliminate the income tax. Those companies will then come back. And then what you'll find is other companies will come because it's cheaper to be here than it is to do it elsewhere. That's your answer. Income taxes are basically from the socialists, from Marxists, and it's really just punishing people. I mean, I was there in Vancouver. I forget her name, but one of your politicians there said that everything you earn belongs to the state, and the state is to decide how much you're allowed to keep. We're not economic slaves.
Yeah, in Canada, income tax was invented to help pay for World War I in 1917, and it only applied to the top 5% of income earners. It was supposed to be a temporary measure. Well, we're still paying income tax, so you're right. Obviously, we never paid it off.
Yeah, and World War II comes, and then, we're creating Social Security. So now everybody has to pay income tax, all right? Then what is the crime? They can't put you in prison for not paying the tax. They put you in prison for failing to tell them you owe it. So that's how they got Al Capone, you know, basically, you lied on your income tax thing. They can't put you in for not paying the money. If you don't have the money, you don't have it. They can't imprison you. Debtor's prison's been, outlawed. But, this is it. It's time we really need to take government, turn it upside down, and let's redesign it from the proper way for the current world economy. This still is not the, 18th century stuff.
Your recent blog was titled, "Beware, Last 2 Weeks of December, Something is Not Right." What's concerning you?
Largely that they have vested so much hatred against Trump that, they used a psychological war tactic. And like they did to Putin or Saddam Hussein or Assad, whatever. Oh, he's evil. Oh, he's poisoning his own people, gassing his own people, blah, blah, blah. They used that tactic on Hitler. They used it on Trump. Now, the problem is, how do you now shake hands with the devil? You have people that they're beside themselves. He's not my president, blah, 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 whatever. You've divided the country so profoundly that all they're going to do is try to prevent anything that he does. And I can tell you, because Tampa, Florida was in charge of the whole Middle East, and Trump had appointed a committee there to decide how to get out of Afghanistan. And they were working on it and everything. Biden comes in. Oh, Trump hired them. They're all fired. Just get out. And it was a complete disaster. Whatever Trump did, he reversed. The very first day, open the border. Okay. My concern now is the FBI has even confirmed over 1,000 terrorists came in through the border. These drones, what are they really doing? They're searching for what they suspect may be a dirty bomb someplace. And what I am concerned about is that these people are going to stage something ahead of Trump even taking office. There's all sorts of rumors running around in Washington that do something like that. They can maybe then declare martial law. They can't prevent him from becoming president, but they certainly can postpone it for a few months. That much they can do with martial law. And people think, oh, that's kind of crazy. Martial law has been enacted in the United States over 60 times. Most people do not realize, but when Pearl Harbor was attacked, Hawaii basically declared martial law, and it was endorsed by the president. So no courts, no, all your rights are gone, that's it. They tell you whatever to do, and that's basically it. So I am concerned that they're going to stage something ahead of January 20th, if not to try to postpone him from taking office. But I know that they are planning a very major protest in Washington. They want it to be so bad that the National Guard has to be called out so they can say, see, he's a dictator. I mean, this is not about the country anymore. It really isn't.
We've talked about Canada and the U.S. splitting up. President Trump mentioned the idea of Canada becoming the 51st state. Would there be pros and cons to Canada and the U.S. merging?
Well, I think you're looking at not all of Canada, but I think you're looking at, you know, the western states would be better off probably joining the United States at that stage. But the United States will break up as well, and probably you're looking at least three different regions. You're looking at New England, the West Coast, and probably the center would join with the South. It could possibly be four, with the Bible Belt being the fourth one separated. So Alberta could certainly join that and be connected. And we're just at this stage where, unfortunately, what has happened in our politics is this, it's like a civil war between the left and the right. Camilla, when somebody had asked Camilla at one of her rallies about abortion, and all offense God or something, he said, I forget what it was. And her response was, you're at the wrong rally. What does that really show? It basically shows how politics has become so divisive. One side gets in, and now it's our turn to punish the other. That's not what civilization is supposed to be about. You know, if you're going to be the head of a country, you're supposed to be representing everybody. You know, you have Trudeau meeting with a 16-year-old girl that knows nothing and then shuts down Alberta. I mean, this is absurd. There's absolutely no proof whatsoever about climate change. Zero. You know, I don't care. You know, you get these fake scientists that, oh, they put out stuff. I mean, I can tell you down here in Florida, we get a red tide in the Gulf. And what were they saying? Oh, same thing. Oh, it's all the farmers, the chemicals. We have to shut down these farmers, blah, blah, blah. I Googled the first red tide, 1642, reported by the Spanish. We've had, ice ages, warming periods, back and forth. I mean, when Mount St. Helens erupted, it put 10 years worth of pollution in the atmosphere from all the cars in the country. I mean, the Earth is a lot more profound than people driving around in their SUVs. I mean, but what are you going to do? You get these people, and I can tell you, because I had a friend who basically was filming some of the climate change people and Greta, and her speeches were being written by Morgan, who was the head of Greenpeace, and she even told the photographer or the guy filming everything, oh, please don't put that in there. She was writing the speeches. Greta had a sheet, and she was just reading from it. She's 16 years old. Come on.
President Trump's threatening 25% tariffs on Canada and Mexico if they don't stop the flow of drugs, especially fentanyl and migrants into the U.S. There are politicians in Canada, federal and provincial, who want to retaliate. What would make politicians want drugs and migrants to continue to flow across the border into the U.S.?
That's hard to say. I mean, this is the problem with our politicians, that, the Democratic Party you know, they're in turmoil right now. Everybody's pointing fingers at everybody else. Oh, Biden didn't get out soon enough. Biden's retaliating against them. He actually came out suddenly and said politicians should be allowed to make money trading stocks. Well, he's been there for 50 years. Everybody's been doing it. Why is he saying it now? Because of Pelosi retaliating against her? I mean, it's really a mess. Our computer is showing that the Democratic Party will probably collapse. It will most likely split. And I know that sounds like crazy, but you know, look, you know, we started with the Federalist versus the Democratic Republican Party of Jefferson. The Federalist collapsed. Then what happened? The Civil War came. The Democrats became the slavery guys of the South versus the Republicans in the North. The party split in half. We're about to do the same thing again. You have conservative Republicans and conservative Democrats. All right, they're more on tune with each other than with the woke side. And you know, I even after Biden, you know, debated Trump, one Democrat who's been there for a long time, you know, I won't mention his name. He actually said to me, well, the country now sees what we've seen for 2 years. I said, I know. You know, what do you want me to say? But, you know, they don't want to tell the truth. They want to keep blaming everything. But they basically went off on all this stuff of transgender and woke and whatever. I mean, just Google it. I mean, the number of people that even say that they're transgender is less than, you know, it's like 3% or something. But they made it sound like the whole country should be that way. You're offending people. It's, you know, we have offices in Thailand, which is probably the sex change capital of the world. They don't say everybody has to call them a woman. They call themselves ladyboys. Okay. What did happen here? Oh, everybody has to change their pronouns and whatever, because that offends me. I'm sorry. You know, you don't tell somebody you can't call your mother a mother anymore. That offends them. You know, you had even one state, I think it was Maine, outlawed the terms mother and father because it might be offensive. I mean, you know, when you go off the farm that far, you're going to lose. And so the Democratic Party is probably going to split. And this is our problem with politics. They jump on one issue. You know, why would they even consider allowing the drugs in? Well, you just tell me I can't. I want to be able to do whatever I want, I guess. I don't know.
President Trump was talking about reducing more taxes that will lead to more revenues. He says this will be the golden age of America. Your thoughts?
Well, actually, all the data confirms that. The economy actually expanded after JFK cut taxes. He was the first to do it. Then Ronald Reagan, you know, he cut taxes and the revenue actually increased. As I said, you know, people left, companies picked up and moved because of that. And look, I mean, if we allocate trade according to the flag the company flies, U.S. has a trade surplus, not a trade deficit. It's so many American companies have moved offshore to do something. And that's it. I mean, this is a world economy.
This week, President Trump introduced the head of SoftBank from Japan at Mar-a-Lago, who has agreed to invest $100 billion in the U.S., creating 100,000 jobs. Is this the art of the deal at work?
Yes. I mean, again, I think if you're looking at what is economically beneficial to a company, when I was restructuring all the companies in Japan who wanted to go into Europe, if they needed skilled labor, I was putting them in Britain because they had good skilled labor, but the tax burden was 40% less than Germany. If it was an airline, they needed just the best tax deal. I put those in Ireland. I didn't put anybody in Germany, and I didn't put anybody in France. And it's all based upon policy and taxation.
At a news conference this week at Mar-a-Lago, President Trump referred to Turkey as being a problem. What are you hearing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Turkey is as I said, Erdogan, he basically has this vision of resurrecting the Ottoman Empire. He's the one that was behind the fall of Syria. And I can tell you from my sources that he spoke with Russia and with Iran and told both what was going to happen and do not interfere. He is looking at resurrecting the Ottoman Empire. He's made a call to all the Arab countries to join with him against Israel. When Hamas attacked Israel, he cheered it. This is basically it. He was funding and training all the people that took down Syria. This is what he wants. You're looking at probably Lebanon falling and Jordan. He wants to resurrect the Ottoman Empire, which used to include Israel.
Do you think the Department of Government Efficiency, led by Musk and Ramaswamy, will be successful?
Oh, I think so. I mean, there's so much, corruption there. The question is, what's your definition of success? I mean, I don't think if they're there for 50 years, they would be able to flush out at all. I mean, the biggest problem that I would recommend to them is that this started with Jimmy Carter in the late 70s. What he did was every year, every agency had to go back with a budget. This is what we need for the year. He put it on automatic pilot. Whatever you spent last year will be automatically renewed next year. So I can tell you there are warehouses at Fort Dix in New Jersey full of computers from the 80s. That what would happen at the end of the fiscal year, they just spent the money recklessly, bought whatever they could, and just stuffed it in warehouses. If you remember the old movie Raiders of the Lost Ark, when they're taking the Ark in a wooden crate, and you see this vast warehouse, that's true. They are full of stuff that nobody has ever used because they just are spending the money so that they make sure they have the same amount next year. And it's then, this is why they got involved in starting to revise the CPI, the inflation index, because he had made it so that they automatically were indexed to inflation. So going into 1980, when inflation was hitting 20%, their budgets increased by 20% for no reason. And so there's so much waste. excuse me. There's just so much waste. I'm not sure that they would be able to even put a major dent in it or where to even start.
Yeah, the best example, I think, of government waste is the Pentagon paid $1,200 for optically guided kinetic connecting devices. You can buy one for $12.95 at Home Depot. It's called a hammer.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen them spend $600 for a toilet seat. it's just insane, absolutely insane. The Pentagon has failed the budget every year. And there was a part of the whole 9/11 thing that the plane to hit the Pentagon. Look it up. The day before, Rumsfeld agreed that they were going to investigate because I think it was $8 billion was missing. The plane hit supposedly the very room where all the records were, so they couldn't do an audit. Very convenient. I know somebody in Congress who went down there and he says he's not sure a plane actually hit it, but c'est la vie.
The Biden pardons, is it true that people who receive pardons cannot take the Fifth in court?
Correct. Also, to take a pardon, and this is going to be very, very interesting, to take a pardon, you're going to have to basically admit guilt. So how do you do this? Unless he's going to create some sort of a variation, like a pardon of innocence, where they don't have to plead to anything. But this is absurd. It's just absolutely absurd. What are you going to do? Just everybody who's a Democrat, you're now pardoned for everything you ever did now or in the future?
Well, if you wanted to be a massively big drug dealer, I guess it would be a super thing to have.
Yeah, join the Democratic Party right now.
Yeah. Are farmers in the UK seeing success?
Little by little, yes. I do think this climate change stuff is going way too far. And the threat that we really face here is going after the farmers, as they've done in Europe, et cetera, is, you know, we're subjected to a risk of food shortages and starvation. I mean, just look it up. I mean, when one of these volcanoes goes, if it's a big one, there's even a book, I think it's 1816, The Year Without a Summer. One, and that was in Krakatoa. It was snowing in New York City in July. It creates what is called a volcanic winter. It throws so much dust up in the air, the sun does not get through. And you end up with massive starvation, disease, et cetera. We should not be doing this kind of stuff. I mean, this is, it's kind of like the biblical story of Joseph telling the Pharaoh. It'd be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of drought. Put, you know, stockpile while you can, because that will help you during when you cannot. But we don't seem to take that sort of advice.
Condo tower clusters seem to be popping up everywhere. Will these be the 15-minute cities we keep hearing about?
Oh, they're definitely trying to push that sort of stuff. It's, you know, that's what they're looking for. It's all this idea of fossil fuels that creates a problem. I mean, you have people that have been just so brainwashed about this. I mean, there was some girl took a tomato soup and threw it on the Mona Lisa in Paris. You know, oh, it's an oil painting. I'm sorry, honey, it's not crude oil. All right, it's linseed oil. I mean, they just don't understand anything.
Are you optimistic as we head into 2025?
Well, I think it's going to be a year where we're going to start seeing more sovereign default problems, more chaos in the sense that we've reached a point of people really questioning the validity of government. We're seeing it in Germany, in France, in Canada, United States. And I can tell you, if they do delay or even try to delay, you know, Trump from being sworn in on January 20th, you're going to have major civil unrest. This is going to be a real problem. But, you know, these people just, they don't look at the country. It's what do I have to do to retain power? And that's the problem. You know, honestly, look, I'll say this. I mean, as you know, I was used to be part of the vetting process for somebody who wanted to become president. They would send me in and, okay, fine, I would talk to them. And it was really a vetting process. I was there to tell them how the world economy worked. But it was really then I would get back, okay, what do you think? Is he smart enough to handle it? Then in 99, they asked me to go meet with Bush Jr. And they said, but this one's different. I said, what's different? They said, oh, he's really stupid. I said, what? I said, why would you make somebody stupid president? And they said, he's got the name so we can win. That's why you don't see Bush Jr. out giving speeches or anything else. And Dick Cheney was president, basically. And they picked the cabinet. Bush didn't. I was even asked to take chief economic advisor at the time, and I refused. I said, I'm not giving up my company for this. So when Trump went in, they picked his cabinet. They stuffed it with the neocons like John Bolton, et cetera, and every one of them was stabbing him in the back because they were experienced. Yes, experienced bureaucrats, part of the deep state. All right, so what's Trump doing this time? This is why he's picking his cabinet before he goes in. This is a shot across the bow. This is a shot to Washington. You're not going to interfere with me again. That's what this is all about. So, but you hear in the press, oh, these people aren't qualified. We don't want those people. We don't want those people that have been there for 30 years because they're not going to do the right thing anyhow. All right, they're only going to preserve the state as is. And it doesn't matter if they're Republican or Democrat. When it comes to money, they're all on the same side.
Where can people follow you and purchase your reports?
Just go to armstrongeconomics.com. We keep it as an open source, so you don't have to put in your email or anything like that. We don't sell advertising, so you don't have to keep clicking things to get rid of them. I didn't think about it, but people have said we're the only ones that are not blocked worldwide. We have offices in China. They don't bother us. I've appeared even on Russian TV. You can get our reports everywhere in the world.
Martin, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Jim, and take care up there.
And have a very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
My guest has been Martin Armstrong, founder of Armstrong Economics, available online at armstrongeconomics.com. He was speaking to us from Florida. Coming up, Eric Haddock, next on This Week in Money.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Eric Haddock, CEO and president of InsideTrackTrading.com. He's speaking to us from Central California. Welcome back to This Week in Money and best of the season.
Thanks for having me back, Jim, and same to you.
Before we get rolling into the interview, can you tell us a bit about InsideTrack and how our listeners can subscribe?
Yes, InsideTrackTrading, the business, is a advisory service and technical kind of tutorial-related educational service on trading. And we provide several different publications on a subscription basis. And the best place for listeners to go and view a lot more information about it, a lot more explanation, and our subscription options is at our primary website, InsideTrackTrading.com. That's spelled with the extra I in the middle of inside. So it's InsideTrackTrading, tracktrading.com.
Now, Bitcoin went over $100,000 U.S., down a bit as we speak. Do you have an update on your predictions or your cycles on Bitcoin?
Well, the cycles remain pretty much intact, and that's really the overriding viewpoint that I have on Bitcoin. We talked about it before, but from a multi-year basis, I thought and still think that Bitcoin will wait until the second half of 2025 to set a more significant peak. In the meantime, there were some very consistent cycles projecting a July-August bottom of 2024. And then in early October is when it really triggered the technical-based buy signals that I highlighted in a couple of special reports I put out to subscribers, explaining why all of my work was showing that Bitcoin should be an October-November surge. And so that still is where we're at from a technical perspective. One of the things I've been watching is the divergence at these highs between Bitcoin and Ether. Ether went up and retested its March 2024 peak, which is still well below its ultimate high, even as Bitcoin was accelerating to new all-time highs. And then just recently, Ether went back and retested that high again. Each time, it did not close above the previous high from March of 2024. So you're starting to develop some divergence there. And my work was showing that after mid-December, you'd start to get some negative pressure on cryptocurrencies, at least for a couple week period of time. And that coincided with what I was describing as a danger period in stock indexes, particularly the small and mid-cap, Russell 2000, S&P mid-cap, 400 indexes that sometimes move in pretty close tandem with cryptocurrencies. And all of my work there continued to show that this week starting December 16th to the 20th would be a pretty precarious time for those stock indexes and by association, cryptos and some other related markets.
Is the gold cycle connected to seasonalities, and where does gold look like it's going from here?
I don't know that I would consider gold seasonal in the traditional definition of that term, but it does have some very consistent cycles that are pretty close to 12 months in duration. So I guess you could argue there's some form of seasonality there. But I continue to say that late October was the time when a multi-month top was expected in gold. That was linked to a 12.5-month cycle that I've been describing all year long, and it was focused all that time on late October, and gold perfectly fulfilled that and saw its initial sell-off and a rebound. And my work's been showing that the final 3 weeks of December should see selling in gold and silver, but that it's set up for a pretty significant bottom in late December, early January. Could easily be a divergent low where gold has its greatest synergy of cycle lows at the very end of December. Silver has a similar convergence of cycles in the first week of January. So I'm looking for those metals to sell off the second half of December and then bottom by the first week of January.
The U.S. dollar is moving higher while the Canadian dollar is moving lower. Do the cycles show a reversal in this move at some point?
I think that we're certainly going to see a bit of a reaction in both of them. My work in the dollar has been showing that it should move progressively higher from late September, when you had a very consistent, roughly 3.25-year cycle, and that's a cycle that I've documented dates back into the 1990s, and you just see these very consistent low-to-low and high-to-high cycles in the dollar on a 39 to 41-month basis. All of that was showing that we should see a 3 to 6-month bottom in the dollar in late September, early October, and a subsequent move higher into January. But I think the dollar is going to put in a pretty significant peak in the month of January and then begin to resume its broader downtrend.
The Dow and the S&P 500 are pulling back from all-time highs. Are there cycle low predictions for the Dow and the S&P 500?
Yes, there are definitely some short-term cycle lows that I'm looking for in those indexes. The first one even comes this week, December 19th, 20th, is a short-term cycle low. And that's another reason why I think and thought that this week, December 16th to the 20th, would be when you see some accelerated selling in stock indexes. You often see the biggest part of the move at the very end of a cycle like that. But that cycle low is only what I think will be the first step in a series of kind of stair-step moves to the downside. I explained back in early October why I thought the small and mid-cap stock indexes would lead an October-November surge, and that they would also lead a topping process beginning on November 25th. That was when the greatest synergy of yearly, monthly, weekly, and daily cycles were all coming into play. Described that to my readers for 2 months leading into that time. and also had some key 3 to 6 month, what I called range target upside objectives in the S&P Mid-Cap 400, right around 3,400, in the Dow Transports around 17,600, and in the Russell 2000 right around 2,460. All three of those indexes topped right on November 25th, right after attacking those upside targets, and began to give sell signals in early December. And since that time, I've been explaining why I thought we would see an initial drop into this week, into December 19th, 20th. My downside target for that short term in the Dow Industrials, explained this in early December to my readers, was that that index should drop down to 41,600 to 41,800 in a quick multi-week plunge. But there again, that's just an initial downside target. And so we're seeing all of that start to come to fruition. I think that you could still see an additional blow off, spike down, and then probably see some consolidation. But that doesn't mean that the decline is over. It's just the first stage of what I think will be a series of declines.
The NASDAQ hit new all-time highs this week. Does it look like the NASDAQ is nearing a cycle high?
Yes, the NASDAQ definitely is. It has been the one holding up the longest, but as I was detailing in a few publications, it also took the longest to match the gains that you saw in those other indexes. The small and mid-cap ones all had double-digit gains in October and November from the time that they bottomed in early October and triggered buy signals to the time they peaked on November 25th. They had gains ranging from 11 to 14% in each of those indexes. Meanwhile, the NASDAQ 100 was lagging coming into the end of November, and that's why I thought it would extend its gains into December. And it has now just matched those gains in the other indexes. So there are multiple technical and correlative indicators that are all telling me that it is ready for a serious correction.
Could the price of crude oil drop further as President Trump wants low energy costs? And what is the crude oil cycle saying?
It could certainly drop lower looking out on the horizon. But things like that, if all of the related policies are able to be implemented, take some time. You certainly get some psychology that might move in that direction and be able to weigh on crude prices a little bit. But there are a lot of other factors that at least right now are supporting the price of crude and natural gas, in my opinion, that you had some pretty significant cycles bottoming in September in the energy complex and also in the energy-weighted Goldman Sachs Commodity Index. All of those were showing me that September of 2024 should be a 3 to 6 month or longer bottom. And my work is showing that crude and natural gas could see decent rallies in the second half of December leading into early January. But I think on a broader perspective, there's a couple of key indicators I'm watching to see if they can turn up by the beginning of January. And if they can, that would tell me that those energy markets have additional upside potential in the first and maybe second quarter of 2025. But that definitely hinges on some corroborating technical action that needs to take place.
What's the latest on the interest rate cycle?
I continue to contend that we're in a basing period in bonds, a topping period in interest rates, but that is only ushering in some consolidation. So whereas you had bonds drop for a couple of years, interest rates rise accordingly, that now my work has shown that bonds bottomed out. They saw an initial advance into last month. They are now seeing what is perceived to be a B wave drop, that I am looking for that to bottom this week, somewhere between December 16th and the 20th. And then I think that bonds could see a second wave higher, a C wave rally, but there's the chance this could be what's considered a flat correction, where both of the rallies within that corrective advance peak around the same point. So you get an initial rally that goes up to a certain level, then a subsequent decline that comes back down close to where the original low was set. So that's kind of a flat, you know, you could draw a horizontal line on a chart between the two lows. And then the ensuing second rally or C wave rebound goes back up to where that previous high was set. That is one of the things that's a distinct possibility in bonds. And so that kind of shows what the Fed has been saying more and more, and the economic numbers have been showing more and more, that there's not a lot of future downside for interest rates. And that also corresponds to what I've been discussing from a much longer term perspective when I described this 17-year cycle, that of the 14 times it has recurred since the beginning of the U.S., 13 of those times have timed a recession, and the latest recurrence of that cycle is in 2025, 17 years from 2008, and so I am looking for some signs of recession, but I've also described in some special reports why I think that this go-round could have a lot of stagflation features to it, and there are some much longer-term cycles supporting that. So you could get something where you get some of the aspects of a recession helping interest rates tick down a little bit, but then you get a resurgence of inflation along with that recessionary movement, and that prevents bonds from heading much higher, prevents interest rates from heading much lower, and you get the Fed stuck in a real quandary, which is what I think we could see out over the next couple of years.
Lithium is pulling back a bit following a move higher after a double bottom. Is the lithium chart looking bullish or bearish?
I don't follow lithium that closely, but I was looking at that a few weeks ago, and it certainly seems like it's in a bottoming phase. But a lot of markets, when they are bottoming, it takes a significant amount of time for that bottoming cycle to play out before you get a significant up move. So I think that we are in that bottoming phase, but what I saw when I was looking at those charts a couple weeks ago, they weren't giving any strong buy signals yet. But as we come into the beginning of the next year, I will be looking at that a little bit closer to see if there's more convincing signs of a impending bull market.
President Trump says he'll be imposing tariffs. Could this be bullish for a number of commodities?
I think that it could certainly contribute to that, although very often it's more the end price that gets hit so much. So, you know, even if a certain commodity was trading at a consistent level, then you add tariffs to it. If it's something being imported, your end result is certainly much higher. You know, there's evidence that the rounds of inflation we saw really from 2020 to 2022 were initially triggered by those 2018-2019 tariffs, and you saw, and then you had the COVID overshoots both to the downside and then back up, and all the supply constraints. But you look at something like lumber that was such a culprit and a villain in the residual effects on things like housing construction and everything else. Lumber had its biggest surge during 2020, when it went from below $300 to over $1,000 per 100 board feet. And there were a lot of other commodities that you saw in 2020 really take off, and that those inflationary aspects were already baked into it. And then obviously with something like that, there's 1 to 2 years of overflow or follow through, I should say. And so I do think that you could certainly see that type of impact from the tariffs if they go through as planned. And it's not saying that I think everything is bad about those tariffs. There's definitely some need for a more level playing field between imports and exports, but there's no denying that there's a cost for doing that too. So we could certainly see some inflationary aspects come from that if a lot of those tariffs go through as warned or as threatened.
Where can listeners subscribe to Inside Track spelled with two I's?
Right at our website, InsideTrackTrading.com. And as you mentioned, that with the two I's in the middle, INSIIDE, TrackTrading.com.
Eric, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money, and best of the season.
Thank you, Jim, and best of the season to you as well.
My guest has been Eric Haddock, CEO and President of InsideTrackTrading.com. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Martin Armstrong, and Eric Haddock. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.